about the Mishigas of this particular day in the United States of America. It is certainly a colorful day. But Hashem, we have a wonderful opportunity to be able to learn a little bit together. And that should, at the very least, make today a day of good and a day of positivity. And Hashem should answer all of our tefillos for us and for Klal Yisrael. I'm gonna make an attempt here to see, and Baruch Hashem, this should work. We'll see momentarily. Please God, this should figure itself out. No, that one did not work. See that? There we go. Ah, okay. And then I should be able to put this up on the screen. You'll be able to see my face as well while we are doing this simultaneously. And then if that is the case, then we'll be able to see each other and be able to learn with it on the screen. And then life will be good for the Jewish people. So we'll take a look here. That should do it. Ah, there we go. That's flipped. So we're going to unflip that. There we go. Baruch Hashem. And we are going to... That's still flipped over there. Let's see if that still works. This is now still the opposite way around. Baruch Hashem. This is very Leibedic. Hold on a moment. See if we can just change this here. No. Ah! There we go. Baruch Hashem. This should do it. Momentarily. I think. Still not. Give me just a moment. I want to be able to share the Maariv Makomos along with you as we learn. And is this looking backwards to you still?
No.
Nope.
I think if you make it a little larger, you'll be able to read it.
So let me make sure of this here for a sec. For example, if I go like that, is that coming up the right way?
That's correct.
Perfect, perfect. Yes.
Now we don't see you, but we see the writing.
But you see the writing. Baruch Hashem, Ashrenu Matev Volkenu. Okay. So back into Einaya. Rav Kook has been going steadily through the beginning of Maseches Brachos, and we spoke about the last two times, more or less, the beginning of Einaya, where the Gemara speaks about the relationship between the Maariv Shema, the Shema at nighttime, and the Achilas HaTruma of the Kohen. And what Rav Kook has told us so far is that eating Truma is something that is uniquely related to a Kohen, much like saying Shema at night is uniquely related to the destiny, the mission, the job of the Jewish people, as we proclaim HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout the long night of our Golus. Continuing in the Gemara asks the question as follows, and I will make this a little bit bigger so that you can all see it as we go. The Gemara says, and you'll see this about the six lines from the top at the end of the line, Gemara. The Gemara says like this, Michti, let's see, Kohanim emas ka'achli bitruma, when does a Kohen eat truma? Says the Gemara, Mishas, tesa kachavim, from the time that the stars begin to appear. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, Litni Mishas, tesa kachavim. So let's just say explicitly, from the time that the stars come out. So the Gemara says, Milsa agav urcha kamash malan. The Mishnah wanted to tell us matter by the wayside. Kohanim emas ka'achli bitruma, mishas tesim kachavim. The Mishnah wants you to know, says the Gemara, that Kohanim happened to eat truma at the time of tesim kachavim. And of course, we've discussed this in great detail last time learning this in Sanhedrin of Kuf. And here we learn that kapara is not ma'akev. What does it mean, kapara is not ma'akev? That the completion of the process of purity does not preclude the kohen from eating truma. And the Gemara is now going to explain this from an interesting pasuk, and this is where Rav Kook is going to get very excited, as we'll see in a moment. Pasuk says like this: Uva Hashemesh ve'toher. The sun will come and purity, or there is purity, or purify. And then the Gemara asks the question: Bia shimshay ma'akva say melechu betruma. The Gemara dashes here that Bias Shimshai, the coming of the sun, will prevent the kohen from eating truma. But his kapara will not prevent him from eating truma. How do you know that Bah HaShemesh means the sun setting and Tir means Tahar Yom, that the day is completed? Dilma Bias Oru, maybe it means Uva HaShemesh, the morning comes, Umava Tir Tir Gavra, and the man is pure. Then the Gemara, we're going to explain this all in a moment. Then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Bar Rav Shela, Imkein Lemakra, Vayitaher. The pasuk then should have said, and he will become pure. Ma v'tiher, what does v'tiher mean? Tir yomim, that the day is completed. Then the Gemara says, k'da amri inshi, as people like to say, e'orim shimsha, the sun is set, v'ad ki yomim, the day is over. What just happened here? So this is a strange conversation that the Gemara is having right at the opening of Maseches Brachos. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, we have a pasuk. And the pasuk tells us, uva shemesh, the sun is going to set, v'tiher, and something is pure. Now, the purification process for a person to become fully tahar requires a couple of things. The first thing that it requires is going to the mikveh. So a kohen comes in touch, comes in contact with a sheretz. And that sheretz, that dead creepy crawly, he encounters a dead creepy crawly. The creepy crawly now renders him tameh. He cannot eat truma, he cannot work in the Beis HaMikdash, he cannot bring korbanos. So he's now tame. Good. How does he stop being tame? So he stops being tame, first and foremost, by going to the mikveh. After going to the mikveh, he will then be required to wait until nightfall. And then depending on the kind of tumah that he has encountered, he might also need to bring a korban. Now, in order to be able to eat from a korban, to eat a korban like a kohen does in the Beis HaMikdash, he will certainly need to bring a korban. And the question then arises, what about eating truma? Does he need to have brought the korban in order to be able to eat truma? That is called his kapara is ma'akev. Eating the korban is going to prevent him from being able to, bring the korban is going to prevent him from eating a korban. Is it also going to be able to prevent him from eating truma? And the Gemara wants to conclude here that that is not the case. Bias shemesh is ma'akvasai. The sun setting will prevent him from eating truma. But the kapara, the karban, is not going to prevent him from eating his truma. But then the Gemara wants to know, well, how should we read this pasuk? Should we read this pasuk that the sun sets, the day is over, and now he can eat truma? Or do we say, no, the sun rose the next morning and the man is now capable of completing his process of becoming pure, and that's when he's allowed to eat truma? The Gemara concludes that we paskin that as long as the sun has set, he can already eat truma even though he hasn't brought a korban. This is a technical discussion in the world of korbanos. Is there a question there? Okay. Is everybody with me on this?
Yeah.
Makes sense? Okay. So now the Gemara asks, what does Tihar mean? And at what time of day does the kohen now have the capacity of eating truma? So let's jump into the piece inside of Rav Kook. from a very technical discussion in the world of Hilchas, you know, Tuma and Tahara, and Achilas Truma and Kachim, Rav Kook is about to launch us into a discussion that is incredibly relevant to each and every one of us in many ways, as we will see in a moment. Rav Kook writes as follows. On the second line here. Shnei Dvarim Shonim Yesh B'Tahara. There are two aspects to purification. Hasiba Shel Hazman, time, She'ein Atzluya B'Mitahar, that has nothing to do with the person that is becoming pure. V'Hasiba Shel HaKapora Atzluya B'ay. And atonement, which is everything to do with us. Let's understand what these two things mean. Thing number one, says Rav Kook, is time. Everybody here is familiar with the reality that time makes problems go away. Problems that existed for a long time, at a certain point in time, they attenuate with age. Or they certainly become less acute. This is true, Chazal tell us about tragedy and about avelus, that the pain that a person feels about a particular reality attenuates, it weakens over time. It becomes easier to manage, it becomes easier to cope with. Limassol, you're driving on the highway, you have a very poshut example, you're driving on a highway, and a guy cuts you off. Totally inappropriate, rude, zooms by you. So you're very frustrated. In that instance, there's a frustration that is almost overwhelming. Very frustrated. And you start talking about the yichus of his mother, and you start thinking all sorts of terrible things. And then slowly but surely, as time goes on, by the time you get home, you might still be annoyed, but not to the same madriga annoyed. Of course, unless you ruminate on it. If you ruminate on it, if you dwell on it, so then it can, you know, Allah has come and come, it can get even better, right? But time heals all wounds to some degree. Doesn't make it go away. The frustration can still be there, pain can still be there, but the acuteness with which a person feels that tsaris, that problem, especially when it comes to a person's own faults and flaws, that diminishes with time. That's called tiher yoma, time. Time takes away the pain of things. And that's crucial to the process of tshuva, is that a person does tshuva, but then it takes time for a person to fix something up. Very good. That's the time aspect. But then there's, of course, another aspect of it, and that is, and then there's also kapara. Kapara is something that a person very actively plays a role in. One cannot be mitkaper without, in some way, shape, manner, or form, taking ownership over it. Even we say the whole of Yom Kippur, ki ba yom hazeh. Yeah? Right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides a sense of kapara, but we paskin not like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. The day itself does not have the capacity to transform a person from lacking kapara to getting kapara. You have to do tshuva. You have to do something. There's a thing that needs to happen. The day itself has tremendous milas, which we're not going to discuss right now. But the day itself is limited to the extent that a person needs to engage in some way in the tshuva process in order for it to work. That's called the Siba Shel HaKapar. Now Rav Kook explains, what does this have to do with Kriya Shema? He says, Gam b'Yisrael inyan Kriya Shema. Baruch Hu, you are Echad Yachudim Yuchad through the long nights of Golos, you exist and you are true. She says, Le'inyan Kriya Shema, Le'inyan Kriyas Shem Hashem Bichlal, to calling out of the name of Hashem in general, Shushorish Bechirasan Shal Yisrael, which is the root of the chosenness of the Jewish people, Yeshnam Shnei Dvarim. There are two aspects to us being the Jewish people. Hazman, the time. The timing of the Jewish people. Shim Ein Adayin Hazman Mukhshar. That if it is not yet the appropriate time, for example, he says, Kegoyin Koidim Matan Torah, Lehoya Olam Yochel Adayin Lekabel Or Torah. We were incapable, the world as a whole was incapable of receiving the Torah. Vayahaya Ha'olam Be'afila. And the world was in darkness because the time hadn't come. And then there is a second aspect of it, Hakapara. Hakapara, atonement. Chuvasham Shal Yisrael, the Jewish people doing what we're supposed to be doing, Lahavi Ora Shleima La'olam, to bring complete light into the world. And Rav Kook, of course, is speaking here on a national level and on a very personal level. There are certain things that a person can only do at the right time. This is what we say colloquially, Bashar Tova Mutzlachas, right? It should be in the right time. Because the wrong thing, or the right thing in the wrong time, is also the wrong thing. I have this conversation at least, a couple of times a year with a young man. This happens in high schools all across the country all the time. Rebbe sits down with a young man, 11th grade, 12th grade, first year in yeshiva, and he starts speaking about this amazing, wonderful, beautiful girl that he is in love with. And you say to him, what's your plan? And he says, we're going to date for another 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and then we're going to get married. Because this is the right girl. And the emphasis, sometimes it is. Sometimes the taka is. And sometimes, maybe it is, but it's just nebuch, the totally the wrong time. And this poor couple goes through, tsaros rabos, of tremendous emotional turmoil and frustration, of wanting to be together but not being able to be together, until Sosef either that ends the relationship or they manage to stand under a chuppah. But either which way, it's a frustrating few years. It's a horrifically frustrating few years. Because even if it's the right thing, if it's the wrong time, it cannot be done. There is a time. Shlomo HaMelech says this, right? L'kol zman ve'es l'chol chefetz tachas Hashemayim. There is a time that's appropriate for certain things. Meaning certain things do take a certain amount of time. And our inability to be able to be patient during those times, Rav Nachman writes, and Rav Nassim speaks about this extensively, that all of the chataim in the world, all of the biggest chataim in the world, are resulting from the fact that people lost patience. The Ramchal famously writes in Derech Hashem, and in Das Tvunas, really, in the 40th parak of Das Tvunas, that were it to be that Adam and Chava would have waited until Shabbos Kodesh to be able to eat from the Eitz Hadas Tavara, would have been fine. Everything would have been excellent. It would have been perfect. They would have been able to eat from the Eitz Hadas Tavara. It would have been Shabbos already, and we would have been Chai La'olam. The Ramchal writes there in Das Tvunos that all 6,000 years of this long arichus of the Jewish people, this very long process that we have to go to until Geula and Bias Mashiach Tzidkenu, please God, all of that process, all of those tikkunim, everything that needed to happen in the world, could have been in a few hours if Adam and Chava would have waited. A few hours. Just wait. Just wait a couple minutes, and it would have been fine. It all would have been okay if they would have just waited a few more minutes. Since this is what happens over and over and over again, you see this throughout Tanakh. Any time that somebody is told to wait, they have a very, very hard time waiting. Very hard time waiting. Those of you that remember from previous Shurim, Shmuel HaNavi tells Shaul HaMelech, the beginning of the end of your kingdom was I told you to wait before you brought the carbon. You didn't want to wait. If you would have waited a few minutes, it would have been fine. Yaakov Avinu tells Reuven, you know why you're not the Bechor? Pachas Kamayim al-Tatar, because you have the inability to wait. Chazal tell us that Yosef HaTzadik, if not for the fact that he would have jumped the gun and told the Sarah Mashkim, please remember me, if he would have waited a few more minutes, he would have come out then. He didn't have to wait another 2 years in prison. Apparently, the inability to wait is, of course, the biggest example is Matan Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu is on his way down from the mountain, and Klal Yisrael say, he said he was supposed to be back yesterday, he's not back yesterday, we can't wait. And Aaron HaKohen is screaming at them, just wait one more day. If you wait one more day, everything will be perfect. One more day, yeah, it'll be perfect, it'll be gewaldic, everything will be wonderful. Those of you that were at BRS West, the Shabbat Shubha Drashas, I spoke about this inyan a little bit. The din is, amazingly, the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur stands in the Azara. After sending the Seir La'azazel, so he sends the Seir La'azazel to the Midbar, and then he waits. How long does he have to wait? He has to wait the Mahalach of Shlosha Milin, 3 million, before he can do anything else, before he can carry on and do the Kriyas HaTorah, and before they can go and burn the Chalavim and Emurim of the Par and the Seir. He can't continue the Avodah at all until the Seir La'azazel gets to the Midbar. How long did that take? 3 million? It depends on Chazanish or Chaim Noe Mil. But I'll tell you that in the Minhagim of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe writes that there has to be a break on Yom Kippur afternoon between Musaf and Mincha of at least 45 minutes. Zecher leMikdash. Because between the bringing of the Korban Musaf and the beginning of the Kriyas HaTorah, which we do by Mincha, there was at least 45 minutes. 3 million means three periods of about 15 minutes each. So the Rebbe has in the Minhagim of Chabad, Zecher leMikdash, you have to wait at least 45 minutes. I don't know if every shul in the world is a makbid on this. This year we were mahadir on it, right? Most shuls had a big break. But at the very least, to have 3 million to wait, it's essential to the Avodah of Yom Kippurim, the capacity to wait. Because that's the Matan Torah Nachamol. And we don't want to jump the gun, right? The first time we lost out because we went too quickly. Now we're not going to go to, don't worry, we're not going to go too quickly. That's the Avodah of waiting. That's the Avodah of Zman. The Tahara that comes as a result of time. Back into Rav Kook, he says that there is Zman. And then there is also, last word on the line is Vihine. It says, Vihine le'inyan kriya Hashem Hashem ba'olam, calling out Hashem in the world, shetehei be'es ha-ge'ula ha-shleima, calling out in the name of Hashem in the world, that will be eventually, when the time comes, al ze me'akev gamken kapara, dehainu tshuvasan shel Yisrael shehadavar tolui b'tshuva. When the time comes, when the appropriate timing comes, then we will need to do tshuva. Aval le'inyan kriya shma shel arvis, but when it comes to the kriya shma shel arvis, calling out to Hashem in the night of galus, kriya shem aleinu le'atzmeinu, kriya shem Hashem aleinu le'atzmeinu, calling out in the name of Hashem for our own benefit, ein hadavar yochel la'akev. Our tshuva does not prevent us from doing that thing. Afal gav de mashchidin makrub bani. Even though we have become decrepit, we're still called Hashem's children. We'll explain what this means in a second. V'lo yitzor ikuv ki'im zmani. And the only question is a question of time. Mitzad erech hazman k'may shahaya k'ayde matan Torah, with regards to time as it was before Matan Torah. So let's understand this for a moment. There are two ways, says Rav Kook, of looking at the Kriya Shema Shel Arvis, the Kriya Shema at night. Kriya Shema at night is a Jew calling out in the name of Hashem for the continuation, for the salvation, for the capacity for a Jew to survive the long, harsh galus. That's called Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. What do we need in order to be able to daven Kriyas Shema Shel Arvis, to call out in the name of Hashem? What does a Jewish boy, Jewish girl need in order to be able to call out in the name of Hashem in the midst of the galus? Do we need the appropriate time? Or do we need the appropriate people? Do we need the time to be right, just Kriyas Shema? Or do we also need that the person be the right person? Says Rav Kook, that is the machlokas in the Gemara. The machlokas in reading the psukim. Does it mean that the time for Maariv has come, therefore say Maariv, regardless of who you are, regardless of whether your kapara is complete, regardless of whether you have brought a karban, regardless of whether you are fully tahar, do you still say Kriyas Shema? Do you still eat your truma as the kohen of the Jewish people? Or do we need to wait until tshuva has been fully completed? Kapara has been mashlim, is now full and whole. Says Rav Kook, our Gemara takes a very emphatic stand on the matter. That in the long night of Golos, if it is the time of Golos, nothing prevents a Jew from Kriyas Shema. Comes the morning of the Geula, where things become apparent and clear, where we see with the light of day, where we're going to call out in the name of Hashem for the rest of the world, now you also need kapara. Now you need tshuva. But between nightfall and daybreak, anything goes. Now, what's Rav Kook baking into this philosophy? Some of you might be familiar with the famous Maamar HaDor. Rav Kook discusses the nature of the teenagers, the adolescents, the young 20-something-year-olds of his generation. And he addresses these people who are the children and grandchildren of Big Tamil Chachamim. Some of them, Big Tamil Chachamim themselves. Bachram that we're learning in Volozhin and, you know, reading Kierkegaard under the table. And he's talking to these chavra. And of course, most of the world is looking at these people and saying, no, Rabbi Kook, what do you have to do with these people? These people are fraye yidden. These people are off the derech. These people have nothing to offer Yiddishkeit. They are the opposite of what Yiddishkeit is. And Rav Kook vehemently and emphatically decides to engage with this chavra. Some of you might be familiar that shortly after Rav Kook arrives in Eretz Yisrael, he goes on the Masah HaKibbutzim. He goes and visits all of these secular kibbutzim in the north of Israel. And he learns with them and he speaks to them. Some of the kibbutzim that he convinces to flip over their kitchens to be kosher. Because he sees within these young men and women who have thrown off the old Torah and the old mitzvahs completely, completely. He sees within these people the stirrings of Geula. Why? Because we're still at the end of the night. And if we're still at the end of the night, so then you don't need to have kapara in order to scream out Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You don't have to be a tzaddik in order to be able to say, I am working for the Jewish people. You don't have to say, I'm perfect and I keep everything in order to say, I'm holding on until the light of the morning. All that you need is for it to be nighttime. And then you can scream out, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You don't need to be a perfect person. Because the light of the morning is ot going to be coming. And when the light of the morning comes, so now we'll be mechayev people to, now we'll be mechayev people that they need to do tshuva, that they need to have kapara. If they want to be involved in the process of building the world of Mashiach, so now you have to fix it when you get there. It doesn't work once everything is clear, and now you're abandoning Yiddishkeit. That's a big problem. But you're in the middle of the night. You're in the middle of Russian revolutions and dodging between pogroms and socialism. So in that world, yeah, whatever you got to do, you do. And Rav Kook, with tremendous insight and rachmanis, gives not a single free pass on Shmiras Torah Mitzvahs, but also sees within these people that are mamish eating chazara and Yom Kippur, he sees the tremendous light of Geula beginning to shine forth, and he's begging them, hold on and say Shema Yisrael. Hold on until the end of the night. Because you guys are bringing Mashiach. You guys are building Eretz Yisrael. You guys are building the world of Geula. This is a very famous hesped that Rav Kook gave for Herzl. The greatest part of the hesped that Rav Kook gives for Herzl, aside from all of the content of it, is the genius of his politics in it. Because when Rav Kook arrives in Eretz Yisrael, Herzl dies very shortly after. Herzl was 44 years old when he died, not a very young man. And of course, all of the religious Jews thought that he was Mamish the Satan, Kimat. And all of the secular Jews thought that he was Mamish Eliyahu Anavi. And you have, also he had a big beard and piercing blue eyes. Yeah, he looked the part. And Herzl dies, and Rav Kook, in his first position in Israel as the Rav Ha'ir of Yafo, is charged with giving a hesped that is somehow or another not going to alienate the Frum Jews or the completely irreligious Zionists. So Rav Kook gives a hesped for Herzl that Mamish doesn't mention Herzl's name even once. Brilliant. Speaks about Herzl without mentioning Herzl at all. At all. Nowhere once. What he speaks about is Mashiach ben Yosef. And how the world of Geula is built with Masa Yadayim, is built with Jewish hands, drawing very deeply from the world of the Ramchal and the Gra, that there is a physical process to Geula. And while never saying it explicitly, he speaks about Herzl as being part and parcel of that process, without naming Herzl as Mashiach ben Yosef, and without labeling Zionism as an entity that brings Geula. He speaks about the natural process of building the land of Israel that comes as a result of people working and building and toiling and planting and agriculture. He speaks about a natural rebirth of the land of Israel and the Geula of the Jewish people. And we'll see this in a couple of pieces a little bit later on as we get a little further. We'll see this in pieces in there's a very famous piece of the Gra, the end of his commentary on Sofer Tznius'a, piece of Zohar, where the Gra explains that Eretz Yisrael is like a body and the Jewish people is like a soul. And that when Golus happens, body and soul separate, and the soul becomes very elevated and lofty and flies up to Shemaim, and the body rots. And that's pshat what the Amar Shmuel says later in Maseches Brachos, that Mashiach is coming when you see Eretz Yisrael giving forth its peros. It begins to blossom, it begins to bloom. There's a tchias amesim that happens to the land of Israel that is the rebuilding of the body of the Jewish people. And we'll see this as well when we take a look at a little bit later on. We'll see how the Ramchal writes in the Mamar HaGeula that Mashiach ben Yosef, the natural process of the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, is Mashiach ben Yosef. That process is called Mashiach ben Yosef. And much like Yosef HaTzadik in his own lifetime is not recognized for who he is, the process of Mashiach ben Yosef in every generation is impossible to recognize, very difficult to recognize. It's Mefurish the Pasuk, Vayakir Yosef es Echav, Vehem, in every generation, those that are bringing about the world of Mashiach ben Yosef, it's impossible for the rest of Kalal Yisrael to see how that works, how that makes sense. The process, the natural process of Geula is always fraught by illusions. It's very complicated, it's very difficult for people to see that natural process of Geula as it comes about. So Rav Kook continues. He says, Aval kapara lo yisuchal la'akev al zchuyos olamenu hapnimi. The lack of tshuva, the lack of full kapara, cannot hold back from our internal world becoming what it needs to become. The fact that we have warts and pimples and flaws and issues does not prevent a Jew from screaming out Shema Yisrael. It's very much alike and akin to the kohen that he's eating truma. It says va'al zeh ne'emar, and on this it says eiz sefer krisos imachem ki lo yitayish Hashem. How many quotes from psukim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never abandons the Jewish people. But before we get to that, we should just note the Gemara that he quoted earlier. Aval gavde mashchin makru bani. So this is how the Gemara learns. Ben kach ben kach kroim banim. Pasuk says atem banim laHashem lakechem. You are children to Hashem. So the Gemara asks the question: does that mean only when we're behaving like banim, even when only when we're behaving like children? Children of Hashem, or even when we are not behaving like children of Hashem. And the Gemara concludes, Ben kach u ben kach, krim banim. Regardless of what a Jew does, it is impossible for them to no longer be part of the Am HaNivcha. It is impossible for a Jew to no longer be part of Klal Yisrael. And this is true, hashgafically, and this is also true, lehalacha. And we should point out lehalacha, and this is where things get interesting and complex. This is a lot of the hot water that Rav Kook stepped into, is that ledina, lehalacha, we have a whole set of rubrics of how to relate to a person that doesn't keep Torah or mitzvahs. So for example, if you have a Jew that doesn't keep kosher, he eats nebuch, he eats McDonald's cheeseburgers on his way home from work every day. So aside from that, for sure being not good for you, it's also usur, because of Basav HaChalav. So that Jew decides that he wants to get a job working as a mashgiach for the ORB. He keeps Shabbos, keeps Yom Tov. He wears tzitzis, he puts on tefillin every day. He just happens to eat treifas and nevelas and Basav HaChalav. So can we trust him when it comes to Hilchos Kashrus? What do we say?
Mumar.
That's a mumar. That's called a mumar. There's different levels of mumar. There's what's called the Gemara in Chulin of Zion says that there's a mumar leteovon. He can't hold back from his taivas. There's a mumar leteovon. There's also a mumar lahachis. Mumar lahachis is a guy that says, I don't care about the Torah and mitzvahs. I'm going to do whatever I want. So mumar lahachis is much worse. Mumar lahachis, we don't trust on anything. But a mumar leteovon, somebody that you just cannot hold back from eating cheeseburgers, we won't accept him as a mashgiach for the ORB. But will we accept him to be a witness in a case of dine mamonis? Questions of you want to know, can he sign on a document that Reuven lent Shimon $100? Can he sign on such a document? What do you say? Yeah? No? What do we say?
If he does tshuva.
But he's not an Eid Hamas. He's not a Russia. He has a problem. He is addicted to treifas. In his business dealings, he's 100% legit. We'll trust him. We will trust him to be an Eid on a shtar. We'll trust him to be an Eid on a shtar. His edus on a document is acceptable. I mean, you should probably find a fruma witness, but his edus on a shtar is acceptable. If he's a mumar lahachis, we don't trust him on anything because we know that he has agendas. So we have a mumar leteovon and we have a mumar lahachis, and then we have a mumar lechalas shabbos b'parhesia, a public flagrant Sabbath violator. So he's considered to be like a mumar la'avodah zarah. Mumar la'avodah zarah, he abandons the entirety of the Torah. And then you have mumar la'avodah zarah, by the way, it doesn't mean that he doesn't come to shul. It means that he comes to shul on a Shabbos, but he also happens to go to church on Sundays. That's a mumar la'avodah zarah. Even if he keeps every single mitzvah in the Torah, if he violates this one mitzvah, or this one avera of avodah zarah, he goes to church on Sundays, so the Jew that goes to church on Sundays is not accepted for Eidus for anything, right? We don't trust him for anything. And then, of course, you have a mumar lechol haTorah kula, somebody that's abandoned the entirety of the Torah, that's given up on Yiddishkeit. So such a person is not trusted for any aspect of Yiddishkeit and might also give up certain rights. We might not be able to count them for a minyan. a man might be able to give them an ali and shul. He's not allowed to be moitzah the tzibur yidei chavasam. So all of these considerations with regards to classifying a Jew that doesn't keep mitzvahs, these are all important classifications for a person to have, for a society to have, to understand how to treat a Jew that's not shomer Torah mitzvahs. And for the longest time, most of European Jewry and Jewry throughout the world assumed that there was some level of equivalence. Meaning, a Jew that is mumer l'chala Torah kula, like Spinoza. Spinoza is no longer going to identify as a part of the Jewish community. So he's the mumer l'chala Torah kula. He is not accepted for minyan and etc. He's in chayim. But what about Spinoza himself? Is Spinoza still chayiv to keep Shabbos? We don't trust him with regards to Shmirat Shabbos. We don't trust him for kashrus. We won't allow him to sign on a document. We won't allow him to be mashal minyan. Is Spinoza chayiv in Shabbos? Is he allowed to eat treifas? We don't trust him for anything. Is he now, is it mutter for him to do these things? What do you say? I mean, a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Of course he is. He's mechuyev.
He's mechuyev, which means that klapei the individual, benkach or benkach krim banim means you're still chayev. And the mitzvahs that you do are still mitzvahs, and the averis that you do are still averis. Meaning there's no way of a person extricating themselves from the Jewish people. That's impossible. So Rav Kook sees this as a theme throughout all of Machshavas of Rav Kook, is understanding that even as flawed and problematic and riddled with issues that an individual might be, Benkach or Benkach Kurim Banim means that they still have a relationship of his chayvus with the Ribbono Shel Olam. They still owe the Ribbono Shel Olam mitzvahs and their chayvus for averus. There's still that relationship. And this is what Rav Kook means when he says Benkach or Benkach Kurim Banim within this context, is that even if a person hasn't fixed themselves at all, so you can't trust them for kashrus and Shabbos and Nida, and you can't trust them to know if the Eruv is up or down. And you won't trust them as a chasim on a shtar. The relationship that a Jew has with the Ribbono Shel Olam is irrevocable. You can't take that away. You can't ruin it. You can't mess it up. You cannot remove a Jew from the relationship with Hashem. It's impossible. Even if societally we cannot treat them as a Yehudi l'chol davar. And that's a prat in halacha. We'll see this throughout Machshavas HaRav Kook, is that which one of these should be the Ikar and which is the Tafel in our relationship with other Jews? Is the Ikar how societally we view them as comes to these Nekudas in Halacha about Shabbos and Kashrus, Tarnish and Mishpacha? Or should we relate to them Be'ikar as a Jew that has a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that the Ribbono Shel Olam loves them and wants them to do mitzvahs, and even if they have never put on tefillin before that they put on tefillin, and even if they've never done mincha before that they should have a mincha, and even if they've never said Kriyas Shema Yisrael Arvis before in their life that they should still say Kriyas Shema Yisrael Arvis, says Rav Kook, Poshet Ubor, that Kapara is not Ma'akev. Tiher Yoma means if the time is right for you to do a mitzvah, even if you haven't achieved Tiher Gavra, the individual hasn't fixed themselves up yet, they should still be doing the mitzvah. It should not preclude them from that. And that, says Rav Kook, is what the Gemara is discussing right here in the deep night of Golos. Which perspective should define our orientation towards other Jews? In Be'ez Hashem, we will continue with this. I should note that at some point in time, I'll probably write about this or speak about this, that in the last 100 or so years, the three Jews that probably most exemplified this perspective, coming from really three fairly different worlds, the three Gedolim that exemplified this, were Rav Kook, the Eish Kodesh, the Piazatzna, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe, all of them Zchusam Yagen Aleinu. three individuals who really led the way of reimagining the Jew that is an Avarian, the Jew that is a sinner, the Jew who has not been mashlim their kapara, as not being somebody that you should write off. All of this is in the works of those three tzaddikim, and we'll see that as Hashem as we continue. Thank you so much. And